The Process, a podcast about creativity and experimental music. In the world of experimental music, outcomes and accolades for creators can be uncertain and at times seem far and few between. Therefore, creators and practitioners of experimental music must embrace the one thing they will always have complete control over, the process. This podcast aims to understand this creative process by listening to new works and discussing them with their creators. Each episode focuses on one creator and their music. Understanding how and why they create can inform aspiring creatives and help audiences better understand and navigate experimental music. I'm Dr. Doug Bielmeyer, and I'll be your host as we explore the world of experimental music, creativity, and the human need to find purpose in their world and lives. This is The Process. Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Process. As always, I'm Dr. Doug Bielmeyer. And if you're listening right now, it's probably just business as usual. But if you're seeing this, maybe you're seeing me for the first time. Maybe you're already sick of my face. Maybe you're saying, hey, this is cool. We can see him now. Maybe you're saying, oh, this is a bad idea. I don't want to see this guy. But either way, if you're listening, it just pretend like anything I just said isn't anything that's happening, just go on podcasting like you normally do. This is season 5, episode 1 of The Process, and this season we're doing a video version as well. So if you're listening on your preferred podcasting app, you can always hop over to YouTube, to the Doug Bielmeyer YouTube page, and there's a whole playlist of not just this episode, but all previous episodes, many of which are audio only, but there is a sort of screensaver video component so you can watch as well as listen. But today we have Bob Familiar, and Bob is a really interesting figure, not only in modular synthesis and just the world of synthesizers and sort of electronic music, but also is sort of a community member or community leader here in sort of the modular electronic and synthesizer community here in Boston. So it was exciting to have him on the show, a lot of great advice, a lot of takes that he has from just the experience of, you know, doing this for as many years as he has, both on creativity and finding inspiration, but also just, you know, how to execute things in live performance, especially when you're dealing with creating new music with a lot of technology. And he even gets into at the end talking a little bit about how improvising with this technology is something that is really exciting to him. And if that's something you're kind of interested into, I think you'll really enjoy what he has to say. Bob did mention, though, something about limitations, and it just got me thinking about one of the classic tropes of, you know, creatives, maybe just not in new music, but just in general, that, you know, creativity is this like running through a field, like open experience, and you know, it's sometimes directionless. You know, you're just throwing darts at a dartboard, hoping to hit a bullseye, or it, you know, a lot of times there's tropes about people, you know, abusing drugs and alcohol to, you know, get on an altered state, especially like when you get into some of the pop genres and, you know, rock music of old and stuff like that. And so it's like, what is being creative? Is it this like kind of chaotic sort of freewheeling thing? And it's interesting talking to Bob and talking to myself, talking to Bob and even just thinking about my own process, I sort of realized, I'm like, wow, the creative process that I engage in is not one that is freewheeling and kind of open and expressive. It's a process. And though there's not, obviously there's a lot of exploration and experimentation in that, but just like a scientist who's experimenting in a lab, there's not just like chemicals flying around all over the place. You know, or it would be a, you know, chemist in a lab. There's not just chemicals flying all over the place. It's, you know, there's a process and there's a sort of scientific method. Not to say that music can only be created that way, and not to say that, you know, live improvisation, like in jazz and other genres, and or even in, you know, Bob's talking about here in electronic music, when you're improvising with technology, it's not to say that that isn't free and open and expressive, but I just think it's great. It just got me thinking on and meditating on a little bit about this trope that the creative process is this open and free thing, where I think in some ways it is. However, there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. And I think definitely, you know, from a younger person or somebody who's starting to create, maybe there's this expectation that it's not supposed to be this slog, repetitive, sort of iterative thing. It's supposed to be this open and free thing. And that's not necessarily the truth. And I think some people sometimes when they start creating, they're like, wow, this is really unfun, or like, this is really tedious to finish something. It's fun to kind of ruminate and create that initial spark, but finishing it is sort of the difficult part. So great conversation with Bob. We're going to listen to excerpts and see excerpts from his performance at April 6th at the Foundry, a great show that Violet Knox put on with a bunch of different acts, including myself. And Bob, we won't listen to his whole 20-minute set, but we will hear and see excerpts from it. So without further ado, let's take a little listen to his live set at the Foundry and then talk to Bob.
What I have found works really well for me is to set limits, set some boundaries.
Yeah.
And so I typically will choose an instrument. It's probably, oh, I just want to play with this for a while, right? This right. particular instrument. And I've got a number of synths here and different keyboards and guitar pedals and things that manipulate sound. So it's like, oh, let me take this combination, usually an instrument, a pedal, something like that, put them together. And then it's just play like I'm a child. I want to experiment. I'm yeah. going to just, you know, if it's modular, I'm going to connect the wires and sort of think about, okay, what if I did this? Well, let me try that. What happens when I feed that through the pedal?
Right.
And I'm looking for a moment where I have this emotional reaction.
Yeah.
I go, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
Record.
yeah, like get that.
As quickly
that,
as possible.
Yeah.
Hit record. Or I might be recording everything I'm doing and I go, oh, I'm going to come back and edit this down. Yeah. It just remind, and thinking about this and preparing for this conversation, I was thinking, you know, all the way back to my childhood, when did I fall in love with music? And it was, right. I discovered early on that music just had a profound emotional impact
yeah.
on me.
Yeah.
I loved music and it would just put me into a particular state of mind. And it was both, right. you know, physical reaction and a, you know, a joyous mental reaction. It's like, okay, that's what I'm always searching for. I want that
right.
thing. I want that dopamine rush that I right. had when I was a kid. And yeah. so as I'm experimenting with this limited set of equipment, mm-hmm. I'm looking for that moment where I go, wow, that's magical. And then record it. So that's really how things start. And it's, you know,
yeah.
maybe I want to say, well, I want to play in this particular mode, or
right, yeah.
Maybe I've worked out a chord progression and I'm going to try to at least put down a framework of that chord progression. Then I will improvise over top of that with a particular right. instrument until I discover a melody or a theme or something that I like. Yeah. And then things cascade from there. It's like, okay, then you get into the process of maturing it and getting it to a finished state.
Right. I like this idea of limits, because I feel like, especially with people like you and I who are into technology and gear when we create, sometimes it can be like everything in the kitchen sink, right?
Yes.
Like we can be like, hey, let's use a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
And then, I went through that phase. Yes.
Right. We might still be currently in that phase, right?
Yeah.
Depending on the day of the week. But so I love this idea of limits, because you're saying, okay, I'm going to use this piece of equipment or this instrument with that. Does that, is there a time limit on that? Like, do you start with just two instruments and then eventually say, okay, let's bring the rest of the band or let's bring the rest of the equipment in? Or do you keep that like sort of rigor of limitation through the whole process? Like, do you say this piece is just going to be this device and this device?
I think when these are things you learn, I think as you go through the process of trying to create music, is you realize how important discipline is. And so I try to discipline myself to don't move away from this.
Yeah.
Okay. I went through it today. I didn't really like what happened. Yeah. Don't throw, but try again tomorrow, because it many times you're trying to get into a flow until something magical happens. And sometimes it might take a couple of days of just playing with the thing till you find that sweet spot. And so I try to discipline myself. Don't unplug all that and put it away. Leave it. Keep playing. Keep experimenting.
I think that's the thing that really strikes me about this type of music, is that when it's performed, or when an audience receives it as this sort of maybe not improv thing or made up thing, very fluid thing, but a lot of times there was like a lot of discipline behind it to be like, no. Let me stick to this. Let me like keep working through this, process or this part of the piece. So then when it's performed, people are like, oh, it just seems like they're vibing up there and it's this really fluid thing. And you were like, no, I had to practice this 15 times in a row and just make sure that I could, execute, this patch change or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Performing live again brings a whole nother angle to this, which I primarily work in the studio. And so I've had the opportunity over the last couple of years, thanks to folks that we know in the community, like Des DiCarlo, I get to now perform, and that's a whole nother level of anxiety, right? So now
it's a whole nother. Yeah.
I'm like, what? This thing I created in the studio, which was very much a studio creation, I now have to take out and perform in public. So,
And then it starts questions of, well, can I actually do it? Can I pull it off? Like, we can pull it off, but is it going to be as meaningful if I'm doing this live? And then what things do I need to do live, right? Like, or what things should I do live? What's interesting? What's not?
And I agree. I've experimented with a lot of different approaches. Like, do I use, let's try backing tracks. I did that. Right. Let's try... Right. Bringing all the equipment I used, and my God, that was very painful. And every one of these approaches has its own level of technical difficulty. And what if something goes wrong? Because something always goes wrong. And how are you going to deal with that? And the piece that we're going to talk about today, interestingly enough, I felt like I finally discovered like this is the way that I can perform live. To do something that is representative of my approach, and it's simple, and can be emotionally powerful. So that was that was like a penultimate moment, really, for that piece, and that took me a few years to get to that.
Right. Yeah. That's the other thing. Two people are like, oh, it just seems so intuitive or whatever. And it's like, well, I did it wrong about 80 times in other shows, like in front of audiences. Yeah.
Oh my God. I've tried performing out with modular. I know a lot of people do it.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
One knob is turned.
Modular since. It's just like, It was really good at home, but it's
right, because the voltage changed, something happened. Oh my, yes. Yeah. That's nightmare fuel right there. Those are the nightmare. Oh, you wake up sweating, being like, wait, I don't have the right power supply. Yeah.
So the gear I was using is, first, the keyboard is the Expressive E Osmos. Mm-hmm. And so this is a revolutionary bit of kit from the company Expressive E, where they've taken a traditional keyboard format, and they've created a mechanism for each key that allows you to have complete expressive control from the moment you touch the key. It then goes down about a half an inch. That distance of travel and how fast you travel is one part of it. Then you hit sort of a bit of resistance, but you can push past it, and that's another about half an inch of expressive control.
Yeah.
Then the key can go left and right at the top, anywhere along that range of control that you're doing up and down. So you've got all of that, and all of that motion, the sound designer can apply to all different aspects of the sound. Any part of the envelope,
pitch,
the speed, the velocity, the pitch, obviously, and for keyboard players, and that's. I'm not a great keyboard player, but I have enough skills to a two-finger typewriter type skills. That's kind of where I'm at with keyboard, but I could play a little bit.
Yeah.
But now I had the expressive control of someone who would play a violin or a guitar, that's never been available to keyboard players other than maybe a mod wheel, right? Or the bend wheel on the synth.
You have to have another hand. You have to use your other hand to operate. This way you can just stay right, you could be playing a full chord with two hands and be actuating some of those things.
Exactly. And every note has that level of control independent. And then there are other effects that you can do where you actually can tie you can choose a distance. Maybe it's a half note or a whole note or an octave, anywhere in between, that if you hold one note and start to play the other, it slides down to that note or slides up to that note. So if you're playing a patch that is like a steel guitar, beautiful. That's perfect. Yeah. That's exactly what I want to get to express with that sound. Then there's the engine itself. The sound engine is it's called the Egan Matrix from Hagen Audio. So they have the Continuum instrument. Mm-hmm. Which also incredibly expressive instrument with like a cloth fabric that piano keys are sort of silk screened on there.
Yeah.
But you can just take your fingers and sink it into that cloth, and you can move in really three directions, X, Y, Z, and slide. And so that's another type of expressive instrument. So their synth engine, which is incredibly sophisticated, that supports additive, subtractive, physical modeling, granular, all different types of synth capabilities. Sound designers can use all of that to create these expressive sounds that are now available. So the synth engine is incredibly advanced. I personally have not dug deeply into that yet.
That's a lifetime of exploration.
So the sounds I was using in the piece were really from that set of presets that they offered as the default instrument. But they were really beautiful
and varied. You know, you started with these very sort of percussive type sounds or little glitchy sounds. And then you moved into sort of longer sustained tones that were reminiscent of maybe a lap steel, maybe some type of Middle Eastern instrument, like, but yet their own thing. Like I thought it was really nice about the sounds that were in the Osmos were sort of vague in, well, wait, it's not just a oboe patch, you know, like where they're trying to physically model an oboe. It's like somewhere in between. Yeah.
And again, back to the process, part of the process of this piece was, let me choose the palette that I'm going to work with. Right. Yeah. So I had 500 things I could choose from, but I wanted to call it down to the 7 to 10 that I was going to use in the piece. Yeah. And I stuck with that. And so that was sort of, again, the limit. I'm only going to use these particular sounds. I'm not going to, in the moment, introduce something I didn't plan that way. That was part of the menu of choices I had left for myself, was these are the 10 you can use. Yeah.
And did you even limit some of the variables that you were going to be adjusting? So in other words, like, did you say, okay, I'm only going to use pitch bend and velocity when I'm expressing? Or did you even limit that? Or did you just...
I guess in a way, I chose sounds, and each sound has a different way that it's able to be expressed. Percussive, you can tap the key. I could drum it. Yeah. But there were others that I could hold the key and push it down, and it would start to repeat, and it might speed up as I was pressing harder. It might go da 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 da. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to use that, and I'm going to try to do that and do it on another point in the keyboard. Can I get those to synchronize into a rhythm? Like, these are little things I was experimenting with to say, can I get them to kind of complement each other? So these were the things I chose the sounds for, how I found them to be beautiful. They would work well together. And then the expressive capabilities within the sound were like, okay, I'm going to work with that again as part of the palette.
So we have these beautiful sounds that are very dynamic and, very expressive, and they're all being fed into now this second piece of technology, which has a similar name. It's the Cosmos,
right? So the Osmos and the Cosmos.
Yeah.
The Cosmos from Soma Laboratories. This is a relatively hefty, I actually have it right here.
Oh, great.
Let's see if I can pull it over. So this is it right here. It's a fairly hefty pedal, as you can see, with a bunch of switches on the front and dials. Essentially what it is if you are familiar with the work of Robert Fripp and Brian Eno, where they were introducing, this use of tape machines to record and then have that play back and then be able to play over top of that. So that's sort of the inspiration for this pedal. Right. And what Soma's done is they've created firmware in the pedal that allows you to play into this pedal. The pedal records that at 24 bits, so very high quality recording. Yeah. And then depending on the firmware you have loaded and the settings on the front panel, will begin to play that back. In the stereo field, we'll either play it just right down the center, or may take it and play a version of it in the left channel and a version in the right channel. And then again, based on the settings, it may chop up that recording and do other sort of glitch effects to it.
Yeah.
The default firmware will take what you're playing and plays it back purposely in a non-synchronized manner.
Okay.
And I have a piece out on my Bandcamp page called Pulse Water 2B, which uses that firmware, which you begin to play and it will take what you've played and put it in the left channel, and then it'll, over a 22-second period, and then play it in the right channel. And at first, they might be sort of close to each other, and then they slowly drift apart. So the the secondary name of this is, it's called a drifting memory machine, is the tagline for this Cosmos.
And so speaking of memory, real quick, you mentioned 22 seconds. So is that sort of the limit of the, is that your recording loop max, or is that 22 seconds, or is it an undefined loop size or window size?
So there's a setting on the unit itself to say how long that recording period is. I believe 22 seconds is the longest.
Okay, so that's the longest loop you could do is a 22. Okay.
And I'm always like, give me everything. I want the
let's loop for an hour and then just
I want to slow things down. I want to make things like last a long time. Yeah, so give me that 22 seconds and I'll find a way to kind of play in that sandbox. Yeah. The firmware I used for the piece that we're talking about today is I loaded a different firmware, which allows you to do classic looping, where it says I want to define 8 bars.
Okay, great.
But then there's a number of things you can then do to that. So so what I did to initialize the machine is I said, play 8 bars at 100 BPM.
Okay.
And by the way, that's done manually. So it doesn't take MIDI. So
is there there's not a software where you can adjust any of this stuff. So you have to do it on the box.
Just hit a button, say, this is when it starts.
Oh,
this is when it stops. So I've got a metronome and I'm going, okay, start it, count it, count it, count it. Okay, that's the end of it. So So even that introduces some variation that could possibly happen. If you were trying to synchronize that with, let's say, a drum machine, it's going to drift over time.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Could you do something very, very rhythmic with this? You could, but you'd have to execute that.
You better practice is all. You better practice. That special thing that I finally realized was, all right, I like improvising. Now I can actually go out and I can improvise, even though I have very limited playing skills. That's another one of the limitations in my process.
Right. You can't. That's a control. That's a constant, right? Not a variable. Right.
But I can actually go out and play. With a machine that is actually doing probably more interesting things rhythmically and so on. But I'm kind of feeding it. So I have some control over that. So it felt like a really nice way to say I can kind of up level the quality of the music and the interesting nature of it. While if I were out there just myself playing on a keyboard, it just wouldn't be as interesting because I'm not a good enough player to carry that off.
So yeah, and I would add a caveat to that. It's like not about good or bad. It's about a different mode of performance. So, you know, there are musicians who can play every single note on a written page and execute it 100%. And then there's people that fall short when it comes to, like you said, like, what am I feeding? I'm improvising and I'm feeding the cosmos stuff. You even said if you give it too much, then it could create something that compositionally is not going to work. So that in itself is like, we always have to like redefine like talent or skill or musicianship, because that in itself I find really exciting. And that was one thing when I was watching the live set, I was like, wow, Bob is in control of not only the keyboard and he's playing that, but he's in control and he's understanding how much he needs to feed to the cosmos. And I even noticed sometimes when the cosmos really got kind of like churning, like the popcorn was popping, you kind of backed off a little bit so to let it kind of settle out. Or if you were moving in another direction, there was a lot of sort of musicianship and manipulation. So
yeah,
maybe you're not playing, you know, a concerto or something like that, but I feel like there's a lot of sort of skill involved in just, you know, interfacing or manipulating the technology.
And I felt like I was composing in real time, which is, you know, if you're playing out with a modular synth, that's kind of what you're trying to achieve, right? By saying, I'm going to have this generative thing, but I'm going to manipulate it in real time and something's going to happen that I didn't plan.
Yeah.
If I were to perform out again, which I am going to do this coming weekend, I'm going to essentially do the same thing.
Yeah.
It will not be the same thing. Right. Whatever happened last Saturday night, that was that.
Yeah.
It might be similar, but it will never be the same. It's and from that sense, it was a composition in real time and it was a moment.
Well, Bob, this has been fantastic. Thanks for coming and explaining a little bit about your process. And in addition to that, talking about your piece live at the Foundry, which we got a chance to listen to and look at today on the podcast. Before I let you go, where can we go to find out more about you and some of your music and some of the events you have coming up?
Well, you certainly can find me on all the streaming services to search for Bob Familiar. I also have a Bandcamp page, bobfamiliar.bandcamp.com. So my whole catalog is there. I have some upcoming shows playing Bleep Blorp on April 20th. I'll be playing with Violet Knox at Synthcube on June 1st. And I'm helping to organize a couple of other activities. One is the New England Synth Fest, and that's May 18th at Synthcube in Waltham. And I'm working with Michael Bierlo, who was formerly the chair of the electronic music department at Berkeley. I'm working with Michael. We're organizing what we hope to become monthly shows called New Edge Sessions. And this is where we take an electronic music artist and an instrumentalist, maybe someone who plays saxophone or cello or violin or something, and have them improvise together for a 30-minute set, and you know, have that instrumentalist do that with one or two or three other electronic musicians for an evening of music. And again, we've done this once so far, and it worked out wonderfully. We had Ken Field come and play with both Michael and with Robin Allman, who goes by the name of Toto Robin. And it was a great show. That was at the Lily Pad. So we hope to do that at different locations over the coming months and sort of try to bring those two communities together. I think there's a lot of opportunity for crossover that may not exist today.
Thanks to Bob Familiar for sharing his time and music with us. If you enjoyed this episode, please check out other episodes in the series. And as always, like, subscribe, and leave a comment on your preferred podcasting app or right here on YouTube. Stay tuned for future episodes coming up in season 5 every other week. And until then, I'm Dr. Doug Bielmeyer, and this has been The Process.